Welcome to Community Conversations, a monthly program on KUMD dedicated to topics of interest in our community and fostering our community connections. I'm your host, Lisa Johnson. This evening, we're talking about sustainability here in our community. When we talk about sustainability, what are we actually talking about? Eating locally grown food? Recycling? We sat down with three local leaders in the field of sustainability to find out.
Hi, I'm Tom Hansen. I own the Duluth Grill. I've been in the restaurant business since 1978, so it's pushing 35 years, and have had the privilege of owning the Duluth Grill since 2001.
I'm Jamie Harvey. I'm the executive director of the Institute for a Sustainable Future, and we're an organization that's been working locally, nationally, and internationally on food systems and toxics issues, really taking a systems approach to individual, community, and global health.
My name is Ryan Bloom. I work in the Office of Sustainability here at UMD, and I also am a volunteer with Sustainable Twin Ports. I'm currently getting my Master's of Education in Environmental Education, focusing on sustainability.
Brian, let's start with you. Let's go back to the beginning and talk a little bit about what sustainability is.
The pretty standard definition that you'll hear is that sustainability is a balance between the economic, social, and environmental realms. So that's a key word there, is balance. So if you don't remember anything else about the word sustainability, remember the word balance, that you're trying to find a balance between the needs of humans and the needs of our environment. Starting with Sustainable Twin Ports, they are a community nonprofit. They do trainings with area organizations and businesses using the Natural Step framework. And that is a framework, it's a strategic sustainability decision-making framework. It helps businesses and organizations move forward with their sustainability goals. Tom with the Duluth Grill was actually part of the initial cohort to go through that training. So there are four system conditions that we teach the organizations and businesses that go through. Take, make, respect, and protect. In a sustainable society, we talk about how we don't take too much out of the earth. So mining, that kind of thing, without giving it time to get back into the earth. Making things, so making synthetic chemicals that can't be broken down easily by nature. Protecting, so not degrading ecosystem services like rainwater filtration in swamps, that kind of stuff. And then respecting is allowing people to meet their own needs without putting up too many barriers for them. At UMD, we have a bunch of different stuff going on, so it's kind of hard to think of where to start there. But for myself, I work with the Edible Garden program on campus. For the summer, it's kind of like the Community Garden program. They've reserved a spot on campus and they can grow whatever they would like. They just have to prove to me pretty much why they would like to grow it. So some groups want to do like a potluck kind of thing. Other groups want to donate their produce to Chum or Damiano. And the goal is just to teach people how to raise their own food. And then a bigger goal is to show them the systems at work for growing food in our region. So knowing the climate, knowing what can be grown here because of that, knowing what restrictions there are because of economics. In our office, we also work on just outreach for campus. So we work on energy saving initiatives. We have a goal to reduce our carbon emissions by 25% by 2020. So that's a lofty goal that we are striving towards. We just actually finished installing the first electric vehicle charging station at UMD. A lot of energy-saving kinds of things and outreach to students. We do initiatives, special events, bring people to campus to talk.
When you work with Sustainable Twin Ports and when you work with businesses, do they come to you and say, we want to learn how to do this? Or do you go out into the community and try to find people and say, hey, have we got a program for you that you'd be interested in?
It's kind of both. I know that we've recruited a lot of organizations because of the networks that the businesses and organizations in the community already have, that they've talked to one another and have said that this is a useful training for them. And so people have come to us. Otherwise, we do some recruiting with Sustainable Twin Ports, going out and we'll have discussions among volunteers and the board members about who we think are influential members of the community, and then approaching them and letting them know why the training is valuable to them and or why we think it's valuable to them, and hopefully they'll sign on.
What kind of a response do you get when you go to them and say?
I think a very typical response is, tell me what sustainability means and why I should care. If they're a business, why that matters to their bottom line, and also how they can use that as promotions for them.
Can sustainability be measured in terms of a bottom line?
I think so. I hope Jamie will hit on this a little bit later, but if we can make it clear the connection between the economic piece and the social and environmental piece, it makes perfect sense, especially if you're thinking long term. It might be a little bit scary to dive into right now, but if you're thinking long term, which is sort of the goal of sustainability education, that it makes perfect sense.
I think the challenge with this is that it's still so easy to externalize all these costs, environmental costs, social costs, and so forth. And so there's, if you're a good business person, you want to externalize those costs. And so you need someone proactive, or you need a culture that's really pushing those businesses. And then I think you have, in that spectrum of business philosophies, you have organizations or businesses like the Duluth Grill. And the Toms of this world, the Tom Hansons of the world, are really unique. So he takes an approach that may not make sense business-wise to maximize profit, but he sure maximizes the health of his community, maximizes the health of his workers, and so forth. And that's going to have to be the norm. And I think what's really challenging is when you look at the climate scientists, you realize that we have to act fast, and actually we haven't acted fast enough. So it's, I think, beyond the point of trying to learn. We've been doing sustainable education for so long. So we need more businesses to join the Tom Hansons of this world and put in those metrics and benchmarks, and maybe take a little bit of a risk, but it will pay off, I believe, in profits that may not be measured on the bottom line.
In a community like this, where people are so concerned with the environment, where so many people move here because they want to be this close to the great outdoors, and they're very concerned with water quality, with environmental quality, when somebody like you, Tom, steps forward and just goes ahead and does it so that other people can look at it and see, you've gained a lot of support from the community right there, because people get what it is that you're trying to do. Are other businesses looking at you and going, gosh, you know, Tom's making it work, so we're going to give it a try?
You know, I think you have to approach it in the sense of your business model. If your business model doesn't philosophically change, it's awfully hard to emulate something that someone else is doing. We kind of took our business model, which many people know we were a franchise before we became an independent restaurant, and those were positive things for our survival in the business world. We could have easily lost our base. So that business model of being a chain restaurant really allowed us to exist and live beyond those benchmarks of 90% restaurant failure within the first 5 years. But our business model changed from the factory mentality to more of a lab mentality. The factory basically produces with an expected bottom line. The mentality is to produce more, cost less. And the lab mentality that we've taken on is to eliminate things that don't work to find out what does work. You know, it goes back to some basic exploration and some really kind of changing. We knew we didn't want to be in the sea of mediocrity within the chain world. We didn't want to be in the sea of mediocrity with the frozen distribution world in the food business. And so we started exploring, and then it turned into more of a lab in our kitchen. And the kitchen lab turned into moving into sourcing new products. And the sourcing of products led us to farmers. It led us to other ideas as far as handling waste. And now it's becoming, on a larger scale, ways that we can reduce those bigger costing items. And so we're exploring using gray water for toilet flushing and garden watering. We're exploring the production of aquaponics, which in our business, if we simply produce 100 pounds of lettuce every year, the project won't pay off. But we're getting closer and closer to being able to produce proteins, which are fish and meats and things. And we have to do it responsibly. It takes a long time. It takes a lot of careful planning that we don't produce a bad product. Eliminating what doesn't work, I think, is incredibly important, and people that want to follow that path will change their business model, which inevitably would add more people into the localizing and the reduction of what you can produce. Sustainability isn't about an end result. It's about a change in behavior. And I think everybody can start with simple changes in behavior. And, you know, we were 5 years ago, as we got entered into the Sustainable Twin Ports Project, we were touting this idea that we went to all fluorescent light bulbs, and we were kind of proud of that at the time. So evolution just keeps going. And, you know, the next thing that we see in sustainability, and it's kind of this mentality of resiliency. So resiliency is thriving within a sustainable framework. And everyone wants the thriving. Sometimes sustainability, people approach it as just reduction. But resiliency is this level of accomplishing and taking on to thrive within that sustainable world. And we're adding those values to our business model.
You're listening to Community Conversations here on KUMD. Our guests this evening, Tom Hansen with the Duluth Grill. Brian Blum is a student employee in the UMD Office of Sustainability, and he's also been a volunteer with Sustainable Twin Ports. And Jamie Harvey with the Institute for a Sustainable Future. Tom, how did you make the jump from a business model to a business/community model? You went from, I have a restaurant and I want people to come and eat at my restaurant so that I can make a living, to I have a restaurant, but I can do all these other cool things that benefit the entire community, even if they don't come and eat at my restaurant.
First, I have to explain my personality a little bit. I have never owned a set of golf clubs. I don't have a fishing pole. I don't have a tennis racket. So, you know, work is really a hobby. And, you know, what I really liked what Brian said is balance. And, you know, I kind of feel some ways the restaurant is supporting this hobby that we have. And so if we want to continue building our hobby to that next level, we have to keep running a good restaurant so we can afford it. We're not self-funded. We live week to week off of what our restaurant produces. We also have to build for the growth of our business, which isn't all free. So we have to keep this real balance that the next phase of our project doesn't put us out of business. But, you know, we've got bees on the roof of our restaurant. We're growing squash on the roof. We're putting in zany greenhouses with fish tanks in our backyard to grow aquaponic systems for plants and fish. So, I mean, it's really just become this hobby that we're trying to support through the restaurant. And we're trying to do it so that we fully disclose what we serve. We're doing it in a way that it's carefully calculated not to put us out of business. We have some of these projects are extremely expensive and somewhat risky. We carry 2 full-time people working on these projects. And, you know, every day it's like a learning experience, and it is. It's like coming into a lab within our business. And then from the food production standpoint, we're able to attract and retain talent. We have some of the best cooks, and we have a number of qualified chefs within our kitchen, and I'm really proud to say that. They have a passion, and they have, you know, had huge expenses going to college to become chefs, and they can use their talents within our four walls. And that's something that we feel is one of those residual benefits that, you know, I said I've been in the business 35 years, and now in some ways have become more of an educator and a facilitator to letting young people enter this business and trying to move them so that this mindset will continuously grow within the restaurant business. We were brought up with chefs. We had people that put their careers on the line to live in this business. And then something came along, and it was really the sprawl of corporate chain business that kind of really deteriorated. The demand for food became that they wanted it for cheaper. They wanted it more efficient, and they weren't teaching people how to cook, and so they wanted it to be a heat-and-serve product, and that's where the industry has shifted, and there's a whole generation that thinks that is what this business represents.
Those of us of a certain age, air quotes, came of age at a time when Earth Day had just begun, and there was the famous ad with the Native American and the tear running down his cheek. This struck us all to the heart, and then it's almost as though that environmental movement sort of went underground, and now it's coming back again.
Well, if I could respond, Lisa, I think what you say it's coming back. I think what's happened is the outcome from what we've been doing over the last 20, 30 years has suddenly become apparent to everyone. So when we talk about climate change, or when we talk about the antibiotic resistance that all our healthcare systems are wrestling with because we use 80% of our antibiotics are used on healthy animals, or when we're seeing communities in social decline because many communities don't even, or businesses don't even provide livable wages or health benefits. So we're starting to see these impacts. And I think the financial crisis over the last 5 years has really made that apparent to people in ways that they hadn't thought. When you layer that on with this obesity crisis that's putting healthcare into disarray, there's all these layers that suddenly, and I think it goes to the heart of what Tom was describing, this concept of resilience. We've lost our ability to be able to respond to these stresses. So in the past, you know, this environmental concept was, oh, that's kind of nice. But now we have less of ability to respond. We have to act. And I think at one level, that's why we're starting to see much more engagement on these issues. And I'm going to have to take issue with something that Tom said. And he said these are zany issues. And I would argue, isn't it zany that we're putting a whole host of chemicals out into the planet that are killing our bees? Or isn't it zany that we're putting a whole slew of antibiotics into our large poultry and animal production facilities such that it's promoting resistant organisms that making us all sick, or putting hormones in, or that we're having businesses that don't even allow their employees to have health benefits or sick days off, because we know when you have sick days, these employees can take care of their children or themselves, and they're not passing that sickness on to our kids. So I would argue what Tom's doing is perfectly common sense, and it's zany what we've been doing. And I think, you know, this issue of where we are right now, I'll admit I take sort of umbrage at these businesses that are still not recycling when we've had a recycling law in our town for 10, 15 years or so, or that there's a mandate for these institutions and restaurants composting. We're beyond having to sort of do the education. They have to step and take a little bit more responsibility, especially since there's been so much time. So we're in a different place, and I would argue what Tom, in sort of, I know he's trying to be friendly because that's Tom's nature, is zany. I would say it's common sense.
You're listening to Community Conversations here on KUMD. Our guests this evening, Tom Hansen with the Duluth Grill. Brian Blum is a student employee in the UMD Office of Sustainability, and he's also been a volunteer with Sustainable Twin Ports. And Jamie Harvey with the Institute for a Sustainable Future.
You know, the other thing to kind of observe here as we're sitting here, we're all triggering ideas off of each other, and we're all taking little notes that one conversation sparks an idea so that we can contribute to this conversation. And I think if Duluth does that as a community and we keep this conversation growing, ideas will trigger. It's not like we're trying to tell anyone what to do. We're not trying to preach to someone else in what they should be doing. We're just exposing things that we're doing. And as Jamie just said, I think I wrote it on my paper, common sense is something that we can all be attracted to. It just makes sense financially. If that motivates you, if it motivates you morally. And going back to the Earth Day issue, you know, I kind of remember as a kid that we were all blaming factories for dumping chemicals in rivers and smokestacks and things. I remember doing an Earth Day project that we all drew what it was, and we drew a factory and a city and, you know, polluting. But it comes back to individual responsibility. If you're going to lead a company, you're still an individual within that company. Now, you can be an individual leader and motivate thousands of people, or you can be an individual leader and line your pockets and jump out with that golden parachute. But I think people, you know, irregardless, are still individuals, whether you're in charge of something or if you're just in charge of your own four walls in your backyard. But we can all individually make those decisions and become part of this community conversation.
There's a couple of things that Tom said. See, now you're getting me all fired up. This is the kind of conversation that I like, so thanks for setting this up. But at one level, Tom said, you know, we can do this in Duluth. And I would argue, you know, the example that Tom, but there's a variety of other restaurants and businesses that are doing this. A number of years ago, some UMD researchers looked at, can we grow enough food? And this is through the lens of food. We can look at it through the lens of climate or toxics or something, but through the lens of food systems. some UMD researchers did a study that looked at in our bioregion, and when I say that, I mean a region that's not necessarily defined by political boundaries. So that includes northwestern Wisconsin and northeastern Minnesota. Can we grow enough food to feed our population? And the answer was absolutely. And so a variety of organizations came together and created this notion of this good food network and started to promote this notion of a 20% local food commitment. Because we can grow 100%, and I would argue many of us still like to eat our bananas, and I forget that we drank coffee this morning, right? So we all want our coffee. But let's just start with something that we can measure. And so now we have quite a number of businesses and institutions. We have Essentia Health, St. Luke's, a Whole Foods Co-op. We have Northland College in Ashland. We have businesses across our region have made this commitment. And I think that's central, again, to what Tom was saying with respect to, well, at one level we can do it, but there's a responsibility. So we're beyond sort of saying we're a sustainable restaurant, we're a green restaurant, and so forth. Now consumers, now people are wanting some proof. They want to see those metrics and benchmarks. And it's less an issue of you're not doing good enough. Then it's like, okay, where do you want to be next year? So in our region, we've created this 20%, and there's a number of restaurants, including the Duluth Grill, which is at 20% from just within 100 miles or so of Duluth, 20%, 6% local. There's some others that aren't yet near that level. But what they've made a commitment to do is move forward. And what's exciting, and again, touches on what Tom was saying again, is that we're becoming this bioregion, an incredible model, not only for the state of Minnesota, but for our country. This sort of, this zany area stuck up in the Great Lakes with these crazy weathers and a summer that really never comes, they're able to really move and make change on this. So it's exciting, and I think all of us at the table likely are pretty darn proud of how we've sort of been able to come together and make this change.
I want to talk about our community, because I think this is such a unique place in so many ways, and you guys have lived other places, I've lived other places. It seems that this community is not just amenable to, yeah, show me the numbers and I'll probably go along, but really wants and desires this kind of change, and that when they see a business that's moving in the right direction, they will make the decision. You know, I've had friends that say, we're going to go to this and such place because I really believe in what they're trying to do. Or, you know, they've got the greatest, you know, fill in the blank food, but I really like their, you know, what the other things that they're trying to do. In this community, people want to support that kind of thing. Does that make this community as unique as I think it does?
I think we have some really exciting social capital, and it may come from our significant Scandinavian heritage, but you know, I think every community thinks they're unique in some ways. So there's really great movement going around the country and globally. And I think what we're seeing in Brazil, what we're seeing in Turkey, are people starting to say they want a little bit more accountability and investment in their communities and so forth. So people are speaking in different ways and at different levels. I'll say we have something special. So maybe I'm contradicting myself, but, you know, go to Vermont, go to Portland, go to Kansas. You know, everyone sort of thinks they're somewhat special. But if we don't start measuring, putting some metrics in place and some places where we want to be, we're never going to get there. And I think that's sort of central to this conversation about sustainability, because otherwise everyone can say they're sustainable.
I think one of the things, too, is to credit the Duluth tourism market. You know, we built it around a very outdoor environment and a very unique. And I think Duluth has been embracing that continuously as they go. And we're very proud of things to show people that come here from all over the country. And people were fascinated by what Duluth had to offer.
Jamie, one of the conversations that I've been dying to have with you for a long time came out of a conversation that we had before an interview where you were able to tie sustainability into health issues and into economic issues, and you were able to show that sustainability isn't just a quote-unquote green issue, that sustainability makes cold, hard sense on a lot of different levels.
Yeah, I guess I'm not a fan of the word sustainability. I prefer the term resilience. And I think it's our ability to withstand. We need people. We need a strong environment. We need strong economics. And I think it's really about understanding how we can no longer silo those. And a lot of our businesses typically have they silo their budgets. And I think we're starting to see how that has influenced those companies that don't silo their various budgets and recognize there's an interrelationship. But socioeconomic health, we can use that. You know, the example that Tom and a lot of the businesses in town are starting to reinvest in supporting local producers, and again, through the lens of food. But that money that comes in plays out, and there's multiplier effects. So you buy local beef or local produce. Those producers buy seeds or shovels or, you know, contract with local businesses and so forth. And that money helps provide those businesses with more money. So that money circulates around. And I look through a lot of these issues through the lens of health, right? So socioeconomic health. We know that socioeconomic health is a predictor of human health. And so these all work together. And it's understanding that these issues are connected makes sense. It's the issues when we look at the use of chemicals and, you know, you can look at climate change. I think what's tricky about working on environmental issues or sustainability issues in Duluth is that it looks pretty darn pristine, right? So it's sort of this little nirvana. But the reality is we're so interconnected globally on a lot of these issues. So every one of us in this room is contaminated with over 200 industrial chemicals, which have all been linked to a variety of health impacts. We don't know how they're going to play out in our lifetimes to our health. Climate change is impacting us all, even though, you know, we don't have huge coal burning plants, or many at least, in Duluth. That comes back to haunt us in 500-year floods last year, or who knows what. So we're all part of this broad, beautiful thing called life, and each of these issues are connected. And so it doesn't really matter what political spectrum you're on or what nationality, we're intimately connected. And I think the more that we are able to see this and weave that into our business practices, into our personal life, then we'll be collectively better off.
Community Conversations is a monthly program here on KUMD dedicated to topics of interest in our community and fostering our community connections. I'm your host, Lisa Jameson. Thanks to our guests, Brian Bloom, Tom Hansen, and Jamie Harvey. Community Conversations is produced by Chris Harwood and Lisa Johnson, with help from Maya Jensen, and funded by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.